There's been a lot of sacrifice for sure, but I look at how far I've come and where I've come from and what I've learned in doing it and the people I've met and just learned so much from. And you know, there's so many instances in life where you can choose to do what you know in your heart to be true versus what your sensible mind talks you out of. And I don't know, it seems like all the successes and all the happiness and fulfillment for me has come from those moments where I just had to sacrifice and jump. And I would encourage anybody to do the same.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the One Take Stoic, as well as the Thriving on Fat podcast. As always, I'm your host, Megan, and today we have special guest Robert Sykes with us. Say hello, Robert.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for saying yes, dear sir.
Absolutely.
So like we do with every One Take Stoic podcast, we start with a quote, and today the quote is, "While we wait for life, life passes." So what do you think of that quote, sir?
I don't know. I think of it's similar to another quote, and I don't remember who it was by or exactly what was written. But I think the Dalai Lama. I'm sure you've heard of it. But the one where he's talking about, you know, man. The thing that fascinates me most about man is that he seeks, you know, to find his wealth, and then he loses it. Something like those. I'm totally butchering it. But it's the same concept of, you know, people are in such a hurry to live life to the fullest and just maximize on all their potential and gain all the riches and the wealth that they could ever hope to accrue. And in doing that, you miss out on the moment. And I don't know, like that to me has been something that I've struggled with and I've really tried to, or am trying to work on, because, you know, it's the moments that compound together that make the life. So taking one step at a time and appreciating where you're at in the moments is absolutely key.
Oh yeah, I love that. I love the way that you took this. It reminded me of a Beatles quote. I think it was Beatles, where it's basically life passes by while you're planning.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I like about this quote the most is that it's extremely true. Seneca and Marcus Aurelius, their quotes are always so concise and they're so to the point. Because when we wait for life, when we wait for, you know, when I get X, Y, or Z set up, then I can start living my life. When I, you know, get X amount of whatever, then I can start being the person I want to be. It's like we have this imaginary goalpost, and once we get to that goalpost, then we're allowed to live.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that, we're never going to get there because we're going to get caught up in the planning of it. And it's just, when we get too caught up in that, we don't even realize it. And then we're 50 years old looking back on our lives thinking, wow, if I would have just taken the moment, taken a few breaths and enjoyed the moment while things were sucking and embraced the suck, I could have actually flipped it around and embraced the bad things rather than dwelling on how I can make it better to hopefully get to those idealistic good things.
100%. This is why I hate the concept of retirement. So many people waste their life away for this arbitrary retirement, and I don't know, like the best years of your life are the ones you're living right now. So take the most of it at all stages and fully embrace it.
I completely agree, because we're not guaranteed that retirement. We're not guaranteed the next day of our life. So why are we constantly planning on, oh, when X, Y, or Z happens, then I'll be good. However, you could make what you're doing, what you love, as much as possible, or make that as much of your life as possible to where you can do that and you can enjoy when you don't have to work for a living. But if you make what you do on a daily basis what you love, it makes it that much easier to continue it until you can't move anymore.
Absolutely, 100%, completely agree. That's how I've tried to model my day-to-day and my long game approach to my career and everything that I'm doing in my life, because I think that is the best way to ensure true fulfillment.
Oh yeah, because I like when you talk about the long game, because that's really what it is. It's not about making a quick buck now to then get to whatever pie in the sky dream you want. If you're constantly being the person you want to be, if you're constantly living the life you want to live, or at least making progressive steps toward that, you're going to be happier and you're going to be more fulfilled. And before you know it, a blink of an eye in 30 years has gone by.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, if more people were able to think that way, there would be a lot more positivity in the world and a lot more happiness if you think about it.
Yeah, it's a hard, I don't even know if you can train that into people. Like, it's almost like they have to be subjected to it and just experience it firsthand. But people oftentimes are so risk averse that they avoid the situations that would allow them to experience it in the first place. So yeah, having those moments are key.
Oh yeah. I think a lot of it comes down to being used to it at a young age, because if you have to deal with things that you are not sure if you can deal with at a young age, you're more inoculated to it, to where it doesn't affect you, you know, when you're 30. If that's the first risk you've ever taken and you're 30, you're going to be scared shootless because you've never failed. But if you constantly do that at a young age and, you know, you're able to do it in a safe manner to where your parents are watching you and then you fall on your face, you're inoculated to it, to where if you do that constantly from the age of 5 to the age of 30, it's 25 years of practice. Versus if you've never done it and then you're 30, you have no practice and you have no safety net. If you're, you know, if your parents allow you to do it at a young age, they are your safety net. When you're 30, they're good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of, you know, changing your perspective. I mean, your perspective becomes your reality. So if you live a life in which your perspective of what is hard just kind of continually upscales, so to speak, so that when you're actually doing something that most people would conceive as hard, it's just your norm, you know?
Oh, yeah. It reminds me of last year, my wife and I went down to the Grand Canyon. And she's like, so how was it hiking down to the Grand Canyon? Because I did it when I was like 16. I was like, yeah, no problem. I mean, I barely even worked out for it. And I, you know, went there for a weekend. I went up and I went down. And it was tons of fun. And so she slacked on the training. And then when we got there, she's like, Megan, you should have made it seem a lot harder than it is. I'm like, well, it's not really that hard. But thinking back on it, she'd never really done anything quite of that magnitude or altitude. So
yeah. Constantly difficult. self-imposed hardships are key, you know, kind of putting yourself in a position to, you know, have to deal and learn and adapt, you know, that's, I love it. I love it.
Right. Constantly adapting, constantly changing. It's the way to live life, because if you don't, that's why people are crotchety and old.
Yeah. You become stagnant.
Exactly. You become stuck in your ways because you haven't had to change. But if you're constantly having to be forced to change and adapt, you know, when that's life, when things don't change, when things don't adapt, that's when you're starting to get, you know, a little like, wait, what's going on here? Things are a little too easy. It's almost like, right, flipping it on its head.
Could not agree more.
Right? I like it. I like it. All right. So that was the quote. And I think at this point we might be beating a dead horse.
Yeah. Because it's always a good lesson to hear again, though.
Exactly.
Right? Keep it on the forefront of your mind.
Mm-hmm. That's why I love doing these Stoic quotes just about daily. I try to do them daily. I get it like 80% of the time. But yeah, that's why I like keeping these quotes on the forefront of our minds all the time, be it, you know, something like a Seneca quote or something like a Mark Twain quote or what have you, something to keep mindfulness on your mind. Because when you slack on it, it bleeds into every other part of your life. Because yes, if we're not being mindful. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why, like, I don't know, like the audio books, I need to do more journaling. I'm the world's worst at journaling, but, you know, constantly having a quote or an audio book or just something that gets you outside of your normal bubble is the right way to approach each day.
Oh, heck yeah. Realizing that you're a very small speck in a very large, wide tapestry, it's a lot easier to stay humble that way.
Agreed.
You know, rather than having the other point of view. Alrighty. So that was the One Take Stoic portion of the podcast. So let's get into the Thriving on Fat portion of the podcast.
I'm ready.
Alrighty. So let's get to know a little bit more about you. What does a day in the life, or rather a week in the life of Robert Sykes, Mr. Keto Savage, look like?
Ooh, well, that's changed quite a bit over the past 2 to 3 years. So lifetime natural competitive bodybuilder following the ketogenic diet. This past couple years, like we launched a Keto Brick, which is our food product, ketogenic meal replacement bar in March. And since then, my day to day has become so incredibly just chaotic that I have to constantly be just thinking on my feet and willing to adapt. But in a perfect world, what I would like to accomplish on a day-to-day basis is, you know, I typically wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning. I work on client emails. I work on, you know, podcast editing, something of that nature, some type of, you know, communicative or creative outlet. And then I train around 5 o'clock in the morning. So Crystal, my fiance, and I will wake up and we'll train an hour and a half, 2 hours on whatever a given body part is for that day. And then from that point, our employees come in at around 7 o'clock, and we have like a business meeting, kind of like an opportunity for us all to, you know, figure out what the priorities are for the day, what the goals are, what the expectation is. And this is the coolest thing. All my employees have become keto. So we have like a little keto Q&A classroom thing where they'll just bring questions to me about keto, and I could help them kind of understand what it is they're doing and why. So that's been really good. And then the rest of the day pretty much consists of me, you know, making sure things are running streamlined with that, with the operations and the Keto Brick production. And then also the podcast, whether I'm recording with somebody or I'm editing or doing a YouTube video, I do a daily YouTube video. So throughout the day, I'm constantly trying to find opportunities for a good piece of content. I'll grab the camera, get a quick clip, get some footage, and then that becomes the next day's YouTube video. So that's kind of a staple in my day routine. And then pretty much just business and fitness and some type of communication throughout the whole day until I am able to, you know, call it quits and go to bed at around 10 p.m. I've been trying to break away from the chaos and find some way to disconnect and meditate in a sense at some point. And I've been getting into archery. So at some point throughout the day, I'll try and grab my bow and arrow and sling a few arrows at a target to just like relax for 5 or 10 minutes before I start up with the chaos again.
Very nice. Yeah, that's, I've seen some people do archery and it seems like a very meditative practice for sure.
Yeah, it's an art form because it's like I do traditional archery, so it's mm-hmm. I don't look through a sight or anything. It's just all instinctive. And if you're stressed out, if you're anxious, if you're just riled, you inevitably do not shoot as well. So it's almost like you have to find that peace and flow state in order to be a good archer. So it's kind of like a self hack, so to speak, that it just forces me to calm down and relax.
I like it. Very cool. So how long have you been doing that?
Probably like the last 4 or 5 months or so, I guess. I bought Crystal and I both a bow and all the equipment, and we were really good at it until the first of the year, and then everything just got crazy with the conferences and whatnot I've been going to. But we've been picking it back up again and trying to make that a daily routine of ours, and just, you know, it gives us something to do together, and then just kind of forces us to step away from the chaos of what is in the moment. So I highly recommend it for anybody that might be interested in archery for sure.
Kick butt. I would love to learn. Just have to get a bow.
Yeah, the cool thing about bow shops is the people that work there are just like super down to earth and cool. I mean, friendly. Like, you can go in there and say, I don't know anything, just what would be a good place to start, and they'll be more than happy to help get you set up and run it.
Nice. Something to do aside from my 9mm.
Yeah, well, that's fun too. Shooting a 9mm is therapeutic in itself.
Right? It's fun. I'm not very good at it yet, but that's why it's yet. I will be eventually.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Right? It's always yet. Alrighty. So that's what your life generally looks like on the day-to-day now. But how did that start when you first started out, when you were, you know, a young man first starting lifting, you know, pre-keto savage?
So when I first started lifting, I was a junior in high school, and I didn't have a clue what I was doing. We lived out in the country, and I didn't have a vehicle, couldn't commute to a gym, didn't have a trainer, so I'd watch YouTube videos and since we lived out in the country, I had like a bunch of pieces of steel laying around, tractor equipment, and I would like I made a bench out of an ice chest. That was my first bench, and you know, I would lift these pieces of equipment. Saved up enough money to buy a simple dumbbell set, and started off very primitively. I did that for like the first year of my lifting career, and from there, you know, I got a vehicle and got access to a gym. And I just kind of learned as I went, you know, watching YouTube videos. I never really had a formal trainer, but I would always just try and, you know, experiment on myself and see what worked, what I responded well to, and then kind of adapt and manipulate it based off of the feedback my body would give me. And I did that for, probably, 3 or 4 or 5 years. Went to college, decided to do a bodybuilding competition, followed a standard bodybuilding type diet, where the nutrition was all, you know, heavily carb dependent and just not optimal for human performance or longevity, and developed a bunch of eating disorders in doing that. And then that's kind of how I fell into keto. I was looking for an alternative to that and kind of stumbled upon keto by accident doing carbohydrate backloading. But once I realized what I was doing and then it was how much better I felt, how much more in tune with my body I got, realized what keto was and just dove deeper, and the rest is history.
Very cool. You know, hence Keto Savage now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Very cool. And you've been keto for 4 years, more or less straight, right?
Yeah, 4 or 5 years. I don't know when the 5-year mark hits, but definitely over 4, getting close to 5. It's, yeah, I've been strict keto. I haven't had the desire or the temptation to have any carb meals in between.
Very cool. So as you've on your path, as you've grown as a bodybuilder from the regular carb fare to the keto fare, and also as you started to develop what you wanted in Keto Savage, so how did you grow as your brand grew, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, so as far as like the business kind of beginning, after I graduated college, I got a job in management with the railroad and moved up to Washington State, was doing that, and hated it, and didn't find it fulfilling at all. And I wound up quitting that job to pursue my goals of being a successful entrepreneur, but had no idea what that would look like. So totally was kind of lost in life. And I went out and I meditated one day, and I asked myself, what can I do that would add more value than I take and could leverage my skill sets? And I kind of reverse engineered what I would think a perfect day would be and kind of worked backwards from there to build the life that I have now. And, you know, I knew that I wanted to do something in line with keto and fitness and nutrition and business. And, you know, lo and behold, that kind of became Keto Savage. Again, didn't have a clue what I was doing. Nobody knew who I was or what Keto Savage was. Like, my first, you know, YouTube videos were filmed on my phone in my closet with a beach towel as a backdrop. I mean, it was just, again, kind of going back to primitive. But, you know, in doing that, in just kind of bootstrapping it up from the bottom organically, I felt like that was the best way for me to find myself and what worked well for me from a business standpoint, but also, you know, what I could find sustainable from a nutrition standpoint. And that's kind of led me to where I'm at now, you know, compounding and progressing year after year. But it's been a wild ride for sure.
Right. It sounds like some uphill, downhill, and everything in between.
Absolutely. It's I don't know, like there's been a lot of sacrifice for sure, but I look at how far I've come and where I've come from and what I've learned in doing it and the people I've met and just learned so much from. And, you know, there's so many instances in life where you can choose to do what you know in your heart to be true versus what your sensible mind talks you out of. And I don't know, it seems like all the successes and all the happiness and fulfillment for me has come from those moments where I just had to sacrifice and jump. And I would encourage anybody to do the same.
Heck yeah. Sometimes it's a leap of faith, but not a blind leap of faith. It's a planned, calculated leap of faith to where you know what you're doing-ish, but you're not sure exactly where you'll end up after the leap.
Exactly. Exactly. You have to have, you know, some kind of foundation, some kind of, you know, certainty, not necessarily certainty, but just conviction in what you're doing. And if you have that and you have the willingness to just stick to that and be relentless towards it, I mean, you can make it work.
Very cool. So during the development of yourself and everything, so what is the hardest obstacle you've had to deal with, be it, your eating disorder or building the keto brick or just reaching out to your first client? What was one of the hardest obstacles you had to overcome, mentally, physically, or what have you?
So they've all been just so very different. Like when I was struggling with the eating disorders, like that was debilitating. I mean, I did not even know how to function in a day-to-day with those. I mean, when your entire life is just revolving around the food you're eating and you are so detached from what your body actually needs, it's a dark place. Like when I was doing my first competition, I didn't know what it was I needed to do. I was doing everything incorrectly. I wasn't eating enough. I was eating the wrong foods. I was overtraining. It was like a perfect storm for just metabolic damage, and that led to emotional damage. So that was a huge hurdle for sure. But I'm glad I went through it because it gave me so much of a scope as to what my body and mind and emotions are capable of, that I have that just a deeper sense of perspective as a result of it. And it's motivated me to add more value to this health and nutrition space because I know how dark it can be. And I just want to help people not have to go through what I had to go through. So that was a huge hurdle. And then like with the business, I mean, when I quit the job at the railroad, like that was the job that I went to school for. That's what I went to college for. It's what I had a degree in. That's what I studied for and spent 2 years in training for. And to quit that to pursue this entrepreneurial journey on YouTube and podcasting and Instagramming and putting myself out there on social media, I mean, that was scary. I mean, my parents thought I was crazy. There's no defined road path or roadmap for that direction in life as a career. So that was scary for sure. And then like with Keto Brick, building that up, we've had to sacrifice so much for that, and we've had to just take on so much responsibility. Like having the employees now, like they count on me to be able to, provide them with a salary that they use to feed their family. I mean, that's a whole nother degree of responsibility that I've never had to deal with until now. But it's been so rewarding to take part in and see how it's just developed over the years.
Very cool. It seems like you have quite a lot of living that you've done in the past 10 years.
Yeah, it's I don't know, like I'm 27 years old, and I don't know if that's considered old or young amongst the listeners, but I'm proud of what all I've done thus far and what all I've learned in the process, and I'm excited to keep learning because, putting yourself out there in life and just going all in on things and getting in those uncomfortable situations, I mean, you learn so much from it, and I'm just excited to keep doing that.
Very cool. Yeah, it's don't know what you're capable of until you muscle through whatever you're dealing with and end up the better the other side, I guess.
Absolutely, 100%.
All right. So when you're dealing with all of, the past difficulties you've dealt with, so how has your self-talk changed from, not knowing what you're doing on top of the makeshift bench to waking up every day and running a quite a successful business?
So my self-talk initially was I've always been confident, I feel, but it was blindly confident in the beginning. Like I was confident, but it was not really based on any accomplishments yet. Whereas now I feel like I've earned some of that confidence, but being confident and being bold are very, very key. So, having like positive affirmations and truly believing in yourself and not talking yourself out of a good thing has been, key for me. I feel like I look at my life as a book, for instance. Like each year is a chapter in my life, and I look at the decisions I make on a day-to-day basis, whether they be, smart or risky or challenging or bold or whatever. But I look at my life and I ask myself, what is this going to do to this chapter in that book? Is this going to make this have an interesting plot twist? Is this going to make this book interesting? Like, would I read this chapter and be entertained? And I've always tried to gravitate towards, you know, building a good story, a great story, one that can hold, you know, weight and add value to other people. And I think as far as self-talk, like making sure that I'm doing things for the right reason and making sure that I'm doing things that are going to push me to a greater extent, but then also benefit others and kind of be a positive light for them, that question and that self-talk is what encompasses every decision I make throughout a day.
Very cool. So have you ever come to a crossroads to where it would have been easy to take the, I guess the, it would have been easier to take the easy road to where your values would have been, I guess, questioned a little bit. And what keeps you from doing that, I guess, is the crux of the question.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, everybody has those. Like everybody mm-hmm. has those crossroads in life where they can either pick one path or the other. And for me, it's like I just have picked the hard sacrificing path so many times now and seen what good has come from that I'm just excited to pick the hardest path now. So, you know, it's like I default to just doing the thing that seemingly is the craziest. You know, with strategy, obviously, like I don't want to be careless. You know, being careless isn't necessarily good. But I tend to just automatically default to the thing that I know is going to be, you know, a greater obstacle and provide me more adversity because I know that I'll almost certainly benefit from that. I think everybody's subjected with those, but kind of making the default go towards the adversity instead of away from it is what has worked really well for me.
Very cool. So as you've grown and as you've developed not necessarily your brand, but your idea of health and nutrition, how has that changed or I guess, yeah, just changed throughout your first starting keto to where you are now? So for example, high protein, high fat, or, you know, Miracle Noodles or Zip Fizz and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, a lot of people when they first start keto, me included, you know, you're coming off of a carbohydrate addictive diet, in which case you're eating all kinds of just things that aren't really optimal. So when you switch over to keto, it's natural to just find the best substitutes for those foods. So like gravitating towards your keto ice cream, your keto burgers, your keto breads, all the carb lookalike meals, like keto cheesecakes. I ate a whole bunch of those when I first started. So kind of getting away from that, the longer I've been keto adapted, the more I've just become in tune with my body and what it actually needs versus what I psychologically think it needs. And then kind of just getting away from the filler keto foods and going towards the wholesome foods that are, you know, really nutritionally dense and good for you. And just not overthinking food. Like too many people overthink food. When it comes to like a contest prep, when I'm getting ready for a competition, I'll get everything dialed in and I'll have like the higher fat ratio. I'll have the, you know, I'll count every single macro, every single gram will be, you know, accounted for, and I'll be incredibly regimented. But like in an off season, like I am now, I just focus on, you know, getting back to the basics and really being instinctive with how my body feels and how it performs and just eating quality, wholesome foods. Like if people just ate at a high fat ratio and quality, wholesome foods and cut the carbs, like that would be a classic 80-20 analysis and they would benefit tremendously.
Oh yeah, the good old Pareto principle.
Exactly, yeah.
Hey, sometimes it's as simple as that. You cut away the things you don't need and simple. It's just, you know, eat a decent bit or eat enough protein, eat whatever your carb tolerance is and fill the rest in with fat. And yep, right. Yep. If you're not going for a bodybuilding competition, you should be good.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like if your goal is just to seek, you know, better health and wellness, longevity, you know, having a ketogenic diet paired with, you know, some strategic fasting paired with resistance training, like that's the three forces that pretty much equal the fountain of youth, in my opinion.
Oh yeah. And it doesn't even take much work. I know I've seen numerous of people get a lot of success by just simply dialing in their diet, figuring out what trigger foods they have, what foods they need to avoid at all costs, because some people have them, other people don't, but just figuring out what works for your body and just simply moving. You don't have to go crazy and, you know, work up to a 300-pound deadlift unless you want to, but you don't have to do something that crazy. It's as simple as eat smart, move well, and you're golden. It's
yeah. I mean, you look at people that were walking around hundreds of years ago, and you know what they were doing in a day to day versus what the day to day activities of a person is now. And I mean, we overanalyze things, we overthink things, and we're much less active than we were hundreds of years ago. So, you know, you don't have to be a competitive bodybuilder, you don't have to be a powerlifter, you don't have to move a ton of weight, but just simply moving more and eating the foods that are here naturally. I mean, that's going to solve most of your problems for sure.
Oh yeah. It's, I know I don't like it when I can't make it to the gym, but with, I have a decently manual labor intensive job. So if I can't make it to the gym, I don't sweat it because I'm on my feet for 8 hours a day and just throwing stuff around. And sometimes it's just as simple as if you can't make it to the gym, just make sure you get up from your computer every few hours. You know, take a 5-10 minute walk, or, you know, as we're recording right now, I'm at my standing desk rather than sitting down because it's just, I feel more alert that way. And it's just, it's easier for me to make it a habit to walk around and move if I'm forcing myself to stand rather than sit down. And then before I know it, 2 hours goes by and I just don't want to get up because it's so comfy.
Yeah, I've been totally random topic here, but I've been heavily considering a standing desk because I think that would be hugely advantageous for me because I spend way too much time sitting at a computer.
Hey, it's super easy to do. I have a 3-shelf bookcase and I use mm-hmm. that, or I use my dressers depending upon how high I need it and what for and so forth. And it's actually super easy to MacGyver.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you need, really. Like, I don't, just talking about overthinking diet, I don't need to overthink the standing desk. I just need to stack some things up and get to it.
Mm-hmm. I just use Amazon boxes sometimes if I'm at a regular table and I don't want to sit anymore. Just grab a few boxes. I always have them lying around.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, you know, it's sometimes we have a habit of overthinking and overanalyzing because it's easy to remain complacent. Not saying that you're complacent, obviously you're not, but sometimes it's just, we don't really think about it until I guess we're forced not to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, let's kind of go back to like thinking outside the box and just, you know, getting outside that bubble and approaching things with a different mindset, different outlook.
Exactly. And just constantly thinking, how can we make this better? How can we change our mind frame to better address the problems that we're dealing with on a current basis? So as you grow in your keto brick business, how do you see yourself and your, you know, business evolving in the next 1 to 2 years?
You know, it's funny because I have like whiteboards full of these mind maps and like timelines of what I, you know, anticipate things will be like. And I've written these out ever since I started into business. It's cool to go back and look at them to see how closely I track with what I had anticipated. And it's almost always just totally different because with business, especially with something that's just as rapidly evolving as like the keto space is, I mean, things that I plan to do in 6 months will be totally different. I could honestly, like, it would be impossible for me to paint a picture of what I would want to look like in 2 years because it would just be so far from what actually is happening in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm confident that I want to just keep building and growing and bettering and becoming more efficient, more streamlined, adding more, you know, venues, adding more opportunity for my employees. Like, I'm so incredibly proud of my employees. Like, they've, like I said, they all are all keto now. They're all like trying to work out. We're building a gym here at the warehouse spaces. So like they'll come work out, and it's just like the more opportunity I have for them and just for people to come in and become a part of what we're doing, the more value I can add to the community, and then not just the keto community, but just my local community. So the more opportunity I can, the bigger I can build a business in a positive way without ever sacrificing integrity, then the more opportunity I can add to the people around me. So that's my intentions.
Heck yeah, that's the goal. I know it can be difficult to want to do that sometimes because, you know, with big pharma, big business, they get a little focused on the end result. And it seems like a lot of these, you know, smaller keto businesses, they don't have that in mind because a lot of them, like most of the smaller ones, they focus on being true to the keto community, being true to the people that help them get to where they are. And I think if more businesses were to be able to do that and have that frame of reference and have that mindset in the start of their business, it would be, doing business wouldn't be such a dirty word, because it seems like, you know, when somebody says they're an entrepreneur or a small business owner, you either get one or two responses. You either get the, oh, that's awesome, tell me about what you do, or you get the way more negative response of, oh, you're a businessman. And it's just like almost like anger and resentment is just seeping out of like the words that they say. It's almost venomous sometimes. And it's awesome that the businesses in the keto space that I've approached and, you know, talked to, it's just nothing but positivity and wanting the best for the people that come and interact with them. And it's awesome that there are so many businesses out there like that.
Yeah. You know, I look at any success I've ever accomplished in the keto space with the, you know, the keto brick or the coaching or the courses or anything really. And I mean, it's all because of the people. Like the reason I see any success is because of the people. So everything that I have and am, I owe to them.
And
people listen to this podcast and having that kind of approach to it is key, because I don't deserve anything. I'm blessed with what I have, and I'm just so grateful for the opportunity that I've been given, that I've worked for, that I want to attack every single day with intensity so that I can have more opportunity to give back to the community, because they've made me into what I am in the first place. So I just want to give, honestly.
Yeah. And it's like what you always say. It's you give more value than you take. And I mean, that's what I try to do on a daily basis as well, because I've been helped so much by so many people in, you know, it not just necessarily in diet and lifestyle related, but in every way possible. And It's just important that we give back as much as we can and then some. We give until it hurts, because that's how we can make a positive impact on this world. And sometimes it takes some really, 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 really good positivity, especially if somebody's giving you nothing but negativity, because they might be having a really, really hard day. And if you give them if you kill them with kindness, they're more likely to hopefully be on a better mindset or just happier after you talk to them, after you interact with them. And it's so important. And just the stuff that you're doing and the stuff that a lot of these, you know, keto folks are doing, it's some awesome, amazing work. And, you know, I get pumped just thinking about it.
No, I really appreciate that. I mean, like where I find any of my fulfillment, it comes from like the emails I get. You know, like somebody will send me an email saying that I've turned a life around, or they'll get motivation out of a YouTube video or something like that. But like those messages, those comments, those are what, you know, spark me up and make everything that I'm doing on a day-to-day basis worth doing. So, you know, it's not the dollar amount. Like the dollar amount's irrelevant. Like a dollar just is a tool, and it amplifies the message that you're able to send. But, you know, it's not like the end all be all by any means. I mean, my sense of fulfillment, like I said, comes from that positivity, those relationships, the people, and anything that I can do to keep, you know, adding value to that, I mean, count me in.
That's very awesome. I mean, it's just, There needs to be more people like you. Like there's some really awesome keto brands out there, but I don't think anybody, except maybe one or two, that hammer that home as well as you do. Like you just are constantly saying that you need to give more than you take. And you need to do that on a daily basis. You need to do that on a moment to moment basis, because you never know whose life you're impacting. You never know who's listening to the, you know, who's listening to the podcast, watching the YouTube video. You don't know. But if you're able to exude positivity, and if you're able to do everything you can to, you know, try and give what you can, all of you, it's just, it has ripple effects, and it's just, it becomes synergistic. It becomes better than, bigger and better than the sum of its parts. And it's just, it's awesome.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, that's why I've tried to make it a point to always respond back to every email, every DM, every comment, everything, because, you know, like, you never know who you're going to touch. I mean, there's been people that have reached out to me and said that they've, you know, been, you know, suicidal, like depressed and suicidal. And like they heard something in a podcast or something that, you know, talked them off the edge. And like, to me, like that is just crazy. Mm-hmm. Like something that I said could have had that big of an impact. Like that gives me reason to live right there. Like that gives me purpose. That gives me something to strive for each and every day. Like if I can say something that has a positive impact like that on one person, then it's been a success, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's just, it's the compound in the compound earning, blah, blah, blah. It's the compound nature of those good deeds is what I was attempting to say, but I totally got caught up.
No, you're absolutely right. I could not agree more.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. So I guess the main thing totally switching gears for a second.
That's okay.
Right? So how far away are you from your next competition?
I'm probably going to do a show in early next year, so in 2020. Oh. So I'll start competition prep, and I'll start, you know, dieting down for it latter part of this year, probably around November.
Oh, very cool. So how is your approach this time going to be different from your approach last time? Because I think your last one, wasn't it keto as well?
Yeah. So it'll always be keto. Like I don't have any intentions of going back to carbs for a keto approach or for a competition prep. I think as far as changes, I'm just going to apply some of the, you know, quote unquote biohacking techniques that I've learned over the years. You know, I'm going to incorporate more sauna use, staying away from any artificial sweeteners that could trigger hunger that much more, and just being more strategic and regimented with my training, as opposed to just, you know, trying to go redlining it, going 100 miles an hour at all times. I think, you know, focusing a little bit more on rest and recovery to just make the whole concept of competition prep more sustainable. But yeah, it's I'm excited. It's going to be good. I always like transitioning into a competition prep.
Very cool. So, also slight tangent, the DSK program that you made with, Keto Connect, mm-hmm. Y'all are, in the midst of whatchamacallit, starting the Summer Shred Challenge, right?
Yes.
So how's that going?
So that's good. It's basically the same course, same concept as the DSK. The only difference is with this one, Jonathan Shane, mm-hmm. who's one of our keto coaches, he's going to be offering kind of like an accountability factor. So anybody that signs up for the Summer Shred course, they're going to get the Deeper State Keto course, but then they'll have access to Jonathan on Slack, which is just a communication software where people can, you know, communicate with him and each other to kind of add that layer of just accountability and camaraderie.
Very cool. So not only do you offer the keto break, but there's also the DSK stuff.
Yes.
Very cool.
Yeah, deepersnakeketo.com for that one.
Yes. Awesome. So there was something else I wanted to ask, but I'm totally blanking on it.
It's all good. I do that sometimes too. It's been a long day.
Right? It totally has. I've been up since 2 o'clock in the morning. So
ooh, long day for you for sure.
Oh yes. Every Tuesday and Thursday. So I guess when you're thinking about a healthy lifestyle, not necessarily keto, but just in general, a healthy lifestyle, what core principles do you focus on to make sure that if I can keep, you know, for example, I try to make sure I have a good mindset, I nourish my body well, I make sure that I keep sleep a priority, I make sure I keep, you know, connections in my life also a priority while also trying to mitigate my stress. And I know if I have those five things more or less dialed in, I can be a more happy and productive human being. Do you keep any of those things in the forefront of your mind to make sure that you're firing on all five cylinders, as it were?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's similar. I've got like pillars, so to speak, you know, health, fitness, nutrition being one, you know, family and relationships being one, you know, spirituality, career path, and business, you know, basically these like self-development, like those are pretty much my pillars. And I don't necessarily think that one can be balanced at all things at all times. I think the quest for balance is just an arbitrary thing that winds up resulting in shortcoming. So I don't try to pursue balance so much as I do just making sure that, you know, those pillars are moving in the right direction. If I have to pull from one to add to the other temporarily, you know, at a certain stage in my life, that's fine. But at the end of the day, I want to make sure that everything is trending upward. So yeah, kind of having those core principles, those core values, those core pillars, and then, you know, leveraging whatever strengths and whatever opportunities you have at that given time in life, is key for sure.
Very cool. So what are your go-to, I guess, your top three go-to things to make sure that you have a good day? Like, make sure you get a workout in, food in, and so forth.
Well, I'm doing like an OMAD approach right now, like a one meal a day, which I don't typically do, but I'm kind of experimenting with something. So for me, it's actually been kind of nice. I've been eating my one large meal at around noon. Today I haven't had it yet because I've just been busy, but one big meal. And then that way throughout the rest of the day, I'm not focusing on food. I just know that I have one big meal and I could just, you know, be more productive, throughout the rest of the day. So that's been really good. And then just making sure that I try and get that training session in and I'm moving the business forward in some form or fashion. Like, my day is considered a win if I train hard, eat right, move the needle with the business, and connect with Crystal, my fiance, at some point. You know, that to me is considered a good day.
Very cool. So what do you do in your free time if you have any?
I have occasionally 5 minutes to shoot the bow. You know, but honestly, like, my free time, I mean, I don't have any free time, but I'm okay with that because the day-to-day is exactly what I would do if I had free time. Like, I love it. Like, I don't feel like I'm deprived at all by doing what I'm doing now because it's just truly what I love to do.
Heck yeah. That's all we can strive and hope for, because you want to make sure you're living your day to where you're not constantly thinking, what if one day, someday. I know that's what I'm attempting to get to.
if you approach, I mean, the fact that you're podcasting right now, the fact that you're putting yourself out there on social media, the fact that you're doing everything you're doing, you know, that automatically puts you at such more of an advantage and get you that much closer to that goal. So keep doing what you're doing for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, I just, you're either moving one step forward or you're falling behind, and you'll have to regain that momentum anyways. And that's just 100%. Right. I don't think I'll ever end up with a business like you have. I would probably, I don't know. I've never seen myself as the owning the business. I've more seen myself as helping somebody else.
You know, that's a hugely important position too. Like, a lot of people, like, self-awareness is very important. And a lot of people, they are just not self-aware. So if you know that you would rather see yourself, you know, being that person that helps build as opposed to helps, you know, or as opposed to the one that creates initially, mm-hmm. You know, that's key. That's paramount. Like leverage that strength.
Yeah, I know. I just, right? Goodness. That's realizing what your strengths are and building on them. And that's the goal. It's just not necessarily just building your strengths, but also helping build your weaknesses as well. And just understanding what you do bring to the table is important. Absolutely. Yeah, it's key because not everybody can bring the same thing to the table. And if we all brought the same exact thing to the table, it'd be a very, very boring table. It's because, you know, that's why we have specialty positions, you know, carpenters, worksmiths, and, you know, I already said carpentry.
Yeah, you know, there's like, they can't all be the same person, you know, bringing your unique personality and your unique skills and, you know, passions to the forefront of your mind and delivering it to others that could benefit from it. Like that's what makes a community and a group, you know, work. That's what makes people a valuable asset.
Yes. And that's exactly what I would have said if I would have thought of it. very cool. So, I guess we'll start wrapping things up. I don't want to take too much of your time. I do want to be respectful because you still have quite a bit to do, I have no doubt.
No, it's been great. I really do appreciate this. I really enjoyed it.
Very cool. Do you mind sticking around with me for a little bit after I close out the show? Just to make sure everything recorded?
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. So before we get going, where can people find you on Instagram, Twitter, and so forth?
So Keto Savage, you type in Keto Savage and you'll find me, ketosavage.com, and all my, you know, social media handles are Keto Savage. So that's where I'm at.
You made it really hard on people, sir.
Yeah. I was lucky that one was still available.
Right. I think I made it just as difficult with everybody. If y'all would like to follow me, you can do so on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all of those at Thriving on Fat. And thank you for joining me on another episode of the One Take Stoic and Thriving on Fat podcast. If you'd like to check out the show notes for this or any of the other episodes, you can do so at thrivingonfat.com/stoic. Also at thrivingonfat.com/hey listen. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like what you've heard, please rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast catcher of choice. I will talk to you for the Stoics out there tomorrow, and everybody else, talk to you next week. With that, enjoy the rest of your day.